Good morning. Welcome back. We've been doing a kind of tour of the Brahmaviharas based on this diamond model that I gave yesterday, which had metta at the bottom as the foundation. And yesterday afternoon we were exploring compassion, which is what arises when metta or kindness turns towards suffering. This morning I'd like to go to the other side and explore mudita, joy, which is what happens when metta or kindness turns towards happiness, towards what's going well. And in the original teachings of the Buddha, as I mentioned, the instructions were simply for each of the four to abide with a heart imbued with that quality and then radiate it in the four compass directions, above, below, and all around, so it pervades the all-encompassing world. This was true of joy too. You simply abide with your heart filled with joy and then radiate it all around. And there's this sense of boundlessness, of unconditionality and complete inclusivity. So later in the tradition, when I read about the traditional way that mudita is practiced, and we were instructed, you can't do it for yourself. It's joy at another person's happiness. I thought that was strange, because everywhere else in the teachings we're taught don't make any distinction between self and other. So it seemed odd to me that suddenly in mudita we had to exclude ourselves. So I asked Andy Olensky, who's a scholar at the Barry Center for Buddhist Studies, what does this word mudita actually mean? And he said it's simply gladness, and there is no sense that it has to be for others. So I offer that just as an interesting take, because usually mudita is translated as sympathetic joy, altruistic joy, empathetic joy, and so on. But in the original teachings, that was not part of what was offered. And I was interested in doing it for myself, because in some ways that was so counterintuitive. Actually, the whole undertaking of joy was a little bit what the Zen people call a going against the grain practice. And when I started to explore it, it really uncovered for me how much conditioning I had around fear of pleasant experience. And I have encountered this in quite a few students too, that there's a sense of what's unpleasant and miserable is somehow reality, and anything that's not that is a little bit deluded or shallow or, you know, not the real deal. And partly that bias is biological, because, you know, the neuroscience cliches that our minds are like Velcro for what's unpleasant and Teflon for what's pleasant, we tend to slide off what's not threatening and be much more attuned to what's is threatening and unpleasant. And then on top of that, I think we add a whole pile of social and cultural conditioning that equates enjoyment with sin. There's a kind of puritanism that if you're on a spiritual path, it's supposed to be unpleasant, and if it's not, you're doing something wrong. And I had this bias in my own practice that occasionally on retreats in the early days, I'd have some moments of actual happiness, and then my thought would be, oh, well, I'm not doing it right. I'm not going hard enough. I should be practicing longer, going deeper, harder, whip, 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 you know. And so there are many people have that bias. And it's true that being in touch with our happiness and our joy actually can make us feel quite vulnerable, because it doesn't last. It does end. And so for some people there's this strategy, well, I just won't feel happiness, and then I'll avoid the misery of when it goes away. There's an example of this Brené Brown talks about, where she noticed in herself this fear of happiness, of enjoyment, when she was going on vacation with her husband, and her two young children were in the back seat, and she turned around to look at them and they were sleeping like little angels, and she just felt this wave of pure joy. And then she yelled at her husband, "Slow down, you're going way too fast." And he said, "Honey, we're stopped at the lights." It was just that immediate connection of undermining the joy with the fear and the vulnerability. So just to name that this exploration of joy sometimes reveals quite powerful conditioning for people. And as I said earlier, it's usually practiced for other people and not for oneself. So I started to think, well, how would I practice joy for myself? And at about the same time, I read a sutta where the Buddha's giving instructions to a layman by the name of Mahanama. And this guy, Mahanama, went to the Buddha and said, in effect, you know, you give all these teachings for monastics, monks and nuns. How about people like me, lay people, who live in their homes that are dusty and crowded with children? So the Buddha's instruction is specifically for lay people. And he said, okay. We didn't say okay, but words to that effect, the Pali equivalent of okay. He said, there are these six things that if you contemplate every day will really help the mind go straight, see the Dharma clearly, and by implication lead all the way to complete liberation. And these six things are, four of them are quite traditional, contemplation of the good qualities of the Buddha, contemplation of the Dharma, contemplation of the Sangha, contemplation of devas, heavenly beings, and then the two that really interested me, contemplation of your own generosity and contemplation of your own virtue. And he said, if you contemplate these six things every day, your practice will really deepen. And I was so horrified when I read that, that I thought, okay, I have to try this as a practice. What would it be like to contemplate my own generosity and my own good qualities every day? So I took it on and combined it with mudita as a way of contemplating, connecting with my own good qualities and my own good fortune. And I did that as a practice. And at first I thought, oh, well, I'll have to be careful because I might get conceited or inflated or feel superior. But actually the opposite happened. I had the experience that when I was more in connection with my own strengths, I could really appreciate what other people had to offer too, rather than being in comparing mind and feeling less than. When I just had that felt sense of I have some good qualities, there was a real ease in meeting others. So we're going to explore that in a moment. But just to say that, you know, if this is an edge for you, I gave those things yesterday about creating a bigger container, making more space if you encounter some challenges, knowing that this is about setting intentions, not feeling an emotion. So if this is a stretch, just to see if you can have patience for it, knowing that this is a purification practice. And again, just to name that there's a lot of cultural conditioning also around not connecting with our own good qualities. You know, I think in this country, don't toot your own horn. In England we say, don't blow your own trumpet, but it's the same thing. Pride comes before a fall. Or in Japan they say, the nail that sticks out gets hammered flat. And in Australia and New Zealand we have something called the tall poppy syndrome, where people who rise too far above the crowd get their heads lopped off. we can laugh, but there's a lot of, you know, conditioning there that says, you know, don't go there. It's not safe to go there. And this is not about developing conceit, but it's taking what's useful, owning it, acknowledging it, and have it be a resource for us on the path. So it's not about inflating oneself, but just owning the full spectrum of our capacity as human beings, because we tend so much to fixate only on our inadequacies and our deficiencies. And the spiritual path, you know, there's always like defilements and outflows, and, you know, you've got to clean up your act. But we also need to see the other side and acknowledge what's wholesome and skillful. So that's what I would like to offer in this next guided meditation, just the invitation to touch into one's own good qualities and one's own good fortune. And again, good fortune doesn't mean winning the lottery or whatever. It's anything at all you can find to be grateful for, from the smallest things to the more global things. So just the fact that the sky is clear today, or you have a clean, warm pair of socks, or anything like that. When I did this work in the prison, I was originally sort of hesitant to even talk about gratitude and joy in that setting, because I thought, well, it's sort of cruel, these guys are in prison. But of all of the practices, they just totally connected with it very easily and were almost competing with each other to find things that they were grateful for. And it seemed to come quite naturally. So anything at all that you can find to that you feel is a little flicker of gladness about, that's in the terrain of the mudita that we'll be doing now. Okay. I'll be using the word joy in the phrases, and just to acknowledge that for many people, joy is a stretch. It might not feel like it's normally part of your emotional repertoire. So it doesn't have to be as big as joy. Anything in that direction of appreciation or gladness. But I'll use the word joy as a stretch just to see how it feels. Okay.